So when was your last checkup? Oh no, not you. Although that's important too, but when was your last vehicle checkup? When it comes to service, nobody knows your Chevy better than your local Chevy dealer. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com to schedule an appointment today.
We've been talking about the bill in Springfield that passed here a lot on WGN throughout the day here. It would be make Illinois the first state in the country to bar the police from using deceptive tactics like lying when interrogating young people. This is for juveniles only, waiting on the governor's signature. And State Senator Robert Peters was one of the backers of that bill. Welcome to the show. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
You're making a lot of news these days. I mean, you and the mayor, what was going on there? Can you give us any updates?
You know, I think it's the fact that elected representative school board is about democracy and making sure that the community, you know, which includes parents and students, have an opportunity to have their voice heard in a democratic system is something that I support.
So you took to Twitter, I saw. Last Sunday, I was chilling at the Chicago Sky game. I saw the mayor and said hello. First thing she said to me was how we're going to four-letter word her, then how this would be a political problem for us. I laughed and responded, what about the game? I mean, you chose to post that. Why did you decide to share that? What was behind that thinking?
You know, I think it's just a bit of frustration that it's just constantly always using the hammer. You know, the fact of the matter is that for many of us who go down to Springfield, we're fighting for our constituents. And when it comes to an elected school board, to hear how what we did wasn't about democracy when the words elected and representative are key words to a democracy, and it was very much rooted in democracy, and then to hear the idea that we could be facing a threat and you know, sometimes you don't always have to take the approach of using a hammer. I mean, my colleagues will tell you, and my family will tell you, I can be hard-headed, you know, and I can, you know, I can be, you know, very straightforward. But you don't always have to use that every time. And you don't always have to use threats every time. And so, to me, it was just the fact that she made comments that weren't helpful. They didn't seem like they were actually rooted to what the bill was doing. And for many of us, the bill was, in fact, a compromise. We would have preferred an immediate effective date. But we're not, that's not where we're at. And sometimes you just gotta take these negotiations and go with it. And lastly, when I heard the words democracy will prevail, you know, I believe that comes off like a threat, like the very idea that we're going to be bullied out of our positions is just not helpful. And, you know, look, I think when I came up to her at the Sky game, it was to talk about basketball. And there's no denying that she knows basketball. She knows she's a season ticket holder for the Sky.
Sure.
It was a Sunday. Having a nice and calm conversation about that would have been great. And I get it. You know, she's very passionate. I'm very passionate. We're all pretty passionate in the work we're doing, but it doesn't always need to be a hammer. Sometimes you can just say, hey, look, I want to have a conversation with you, dig deeper on this. And sometimes there's disagreements and we go from there.
Right.
And so my hopes are, as we move forward, that it's not just always a hammer. Sometimes it's just a good conversation. If there's disagreements, we go from there. At the end of the day, we have to explain to the people we represent.
Yeah, I think that is the right way to go about it. I don't know that the mayor was, when she said democracy will prevail, that was bullying. I thought that would be her version of democracy. And your version, I mean, the outcomes of the democracy would be different. Like she thought that people would ultimately vote against this or more for this hybrid model. And you wanted it to see it more immediate, this elected school board. That's the way I interpreted it, unless there was some more semantics behind the scenes that I'm not aware of. But it seemed as if she wasn't necessarily bullying. It was just she felt the people would ultimately support her position.
That's fair. I'll just say, you know, this has been on the ballot in terms of referendum over and over again. It has had broad public support. Almost every community in the city of Chicago supports an elected representative school board. Some people, she ran for mayor on elected representative school board. I will say democracy has spoken in terms of other elections, referendums and city elections, and some of the people like us who've been sent down to Springfield to deliver this for our community. And my hope is that democracy will prevail when we have a chance to have an elected representative school board, and that those who are running for that school board who are tied to that community go out and talk to people to vote for them. That is an expression of democracy, because I'll repeat, at the end of the day, this is about an elected representative school board. It's not mm-hmm. about a technocratic, top-down, one person making the decision. It's about a broad set of the public being able to participate in the education system. And to be honest with you, after the last few decades for how we've seen systems go, I think I trust regular people more than I trust anybody when it comes to the policies that we need in this city. And so I understand there's some I get it, there's some disagreements, and it happens, and my hope is at the end of the day that we can come together and build the Chicago and the Illinois that we deserve. And that's why I'm excited to talk about what we did in terms of this deceptive practices.
Let's get into that, because that is bipartisan support, Senator Peters. Lots of people supported what you did here for juveniles, that police are no longer going to be able to use deceptive tactics when they're interrogating juveniles. Tell us why you decided to get behind it.
Yeah, I mean, let me first give credit to a few people here. The Innocence Project, who's been working on this across the country. I need to give, a credit to State's Attorney Kim Fox, who, has been working on this when it comes to Cook County. The Wrongful Conviction Center at Northwestern, that's been doing this work and working directly with people who've been wrongfully convicted and have a long history of doing this. I have to give credit to those who survived wrongful convictions, like Terrell Swift, who was part of the Englewood Four, who came to committee and spoke brutally honest about the pain that he went through, the pain his family went through, and the pain that the community went through. And so for me, it's not even just about sort of the individualized piece to this, but on a broader level, it's about the fact that people need to be able to trust the systems around them, trust each other, trust institutions. And what we have is a world right now where people don't have that level of trust anymore. And to me, the very idea that you could lie to a young person in an interrogation is the ultimate form of creating distrust. It's the ultimate form of isolation. And so I was presented with the chance to carry this piece of legislation, I thought about my own individual experiences. Often that's a thing that that happens for me. I think about the experiences of other people, and I think about what does it mean for the world that we're building.
Yeah, I hear you. We talked to Eddie Johnson, the former superintendent, on the show earlier today, and he mentioned that he used to be a detective. He reminded us of that. He said he didn't see that this was rarely used, but I think he agreed with it for juveniles, and he certainly understands where we are today and that need to rebuild trust between the two, the police and the community, right? It's such an important thing, and this may be one of the ways you get there. You've heard from the police officers who said this is an important tool. I don't know that many police officers are necessarily against it when it comes to juveniles, but in general, generally speaking, when you hear them say that, what do you think for general interrogations using deceit as a tactic?
How do we expect people to trust anybody if you feel like you can just lie to them all the time? To me, when it comes, particularly with that, this narrow to young people, there's a greater sense of being young, an authority figure, believing that what they're telling you will help you get out of the situation. That's already painful in itself. If you're an adult, you still have to worry about the authority and how that's called. There's a reason why we call police the authorities, right? So you still have to navigate that sense of an authority. You don't have nearly as much of a position of intimidation like you do when you're young or a child, right? So that there is a difference there for sure. But the other part about this is, if you believe that you need to use deception, you need to deceive or coerce people, how are they ever going to have any faith or trust, not just in the system of policing, that's a whole other topic in each other, right? If it's considered okay to lie. I mean, I was raised Catholic, right? And for me, it's like, you don't, I say this as a Catholic, you don't go in the confession booth and say, let me just lie to this authority figure real quick to make myself feel better. The reason why, you have the confessional is the idea of being able to sort of, that sense of honesty and trust, and that you're in this space of honesty and trust. I don't know how having people not trust each other improves public safety. If anything, it makes us less safe, because if we don't see, we don't do to others as we want done to ourselves, because we don't actually feel like we need to owe that to other people, then we're not going to invest in people. And you combine that with people who are in some, often most people, right? Let's take out the most egregious thing. Most people are in desperate situations or have been in systemically desperate situations. You combine all of that, you create a very, very, very rough and horrible and individualistic environment, which is dangerous to anybody, no matter where you live and no matter your zip code, no matter what zip code.
You make an important point, and the fact that 30% of all wrongful convictions that were overturned on DNA evidence, meaning they could never have committed that crime, were juveniles who said they felt influenced to falsely confess. So those are things you need to reckon with. I appreciate your time and explaining this, and it does seem as if the governor will sign it. Have you been given any indication he'll do otherwise?
I believe the governor will sign it, and I'm really excited to see this go into law. And let me just say, it will be a model that I hope other states take up. I've already talked to a representative in Pennsylvania who's a friend of mine who reached out, and hopefully the Innocence Project and the Wrongful Conviction Center can make, Pennsylvania can follow Illinois' lead.
Yeah, they've done great work over the years, too. Thank you for keeping in touch with us, and please stay in touch, Senator Peters. Appreciate your time.
Definitely. Thank you.
State Senator Robert Peters there. Let's